Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 64 of Nutanix Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. Today is January 23rd of 2023. Hey, January is almost over.
Yeah.
Think about it.
No pressure.
What have we got done? Well, I don't know about you guys, it's not a lot. All right. The cast and crew on the screen here with me is Harvey Green, president and CEO of Zintegra Gov. Harvey, was last year, 2022, was it everything you dreamed it would be for Zintegra Gov?
And more.
More.
Which is great. It was the best of the best and the worst of the worst all in one.
It's the best year you ever had.
That's right. Best year I ever had and most work I've ever had.
All up and to the right from here.
I wish I could tell you it was going to get easier, but it's still fun.
I know better.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if somebody told you there was an end, but that end, it ain't the end you want. I don't know. Maybe someday. That shouldn't be true.
I can at least say that I've accomplished something this month, and that's just listing out the things that I need to do.
So here's an example. I'm on the screen here. I've got my laptop over here with a little crappy camera. I don't even make eye contact with it very much. One of my to-dos for Christmas was to buy myself a new webcam. Well, it's January 23rd, and I still don't have a webcam for my office setup.
Hey, listing it is still accomplishing something.
Well, our other crew members, Philip Sellers. Philip, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I know I asked you a question earlier today, but you've been at Zintegra now for 8 months or 8 days. I don't remember which one.
Almost 3 months.
All right. And part of that journey for you is to learn the Nutanix world, which I know you were excited about coming into. I probably asked you this last time. Highlights so far of becoming a Nutanix subject matter expert?
You know, there's a lot more here than I gave them credit for early on. Like I think a lot of people in the industry, you may not realize, and you may be very pleasantly surprised how much growth there's been in the Nutanix platform, what capabilities are there, and differentiation that doesn't exist in other solutions.
Yeah. Well, one of those things, we're going to talk about flow here in a few minutes, but automation as a part of the platform, and you said platform, I said platform, it's platform. And that's really how you need to look at it if you're going to try to get the most out of it.
We all scream platform.
All screen platform. Jira's gonna have a t-shirt. We all screen platform. So Jira Cox is with us. Jira is our Nutanix subject matter expert, gracious enough to join us for these podcasts. I asked him one time what part of his job this was, and he said it's not. I just like you guys. I was like, oh, okay.
Not to be the downer here, but 2023 is already 6.5% over, so no pressure.
Wow.
Single digits. Tell me when it's double digits.
Are we done making our list and getting onto stuff now?
Oh, man. I think it's...
I wish it were so.
I think it's pretty much a given every year, though, that January is just going to go flying by. And I mean, my kids are out of school like 8 days in January. I remember I used to couldn't get a day off after Christmas, and
right,
they're home every day.
Wait, you can now?
No.
Yeah.
Harvey pulls up his inbox for December 26th.
Well, it's easy when you love what you do. I don't know if that makes it go by fast, but it definitely makes it go by fast.
Yes.
Almost too fast.
Yes.
Well, guys, today we agreed to talk about automation because that's my favorite topic. And this is my second podcast today where we talk about automation. And the first one was in ServiceNow. We talked about, you know, integrating Nutanix and Flow as part of that one as well. Automating good processes is a no-brainer. And one of the things I love about the ServiceNow platform, it gets us a chance to kind of make those processes efficient and then automate them in conjunction with integrations from things like Flow. So I'm softening.
Nice. So
the title of this blog is from October 28th. It is Nutanix Flow Security Best Practices, Part 1, What is Flow Network Security? So I guess everything in IT these days, consumer, enterprise, it all needs a security eye to it. And automation is, of course, something that's important that we try to make sure we don't leave wide open, and that we do recommended practices so that we're not leaving ourselves vulnerable or unable to answer those challenging questions when they come. You know, did you not do this or that? Jaira, you you brought us this blog. Why is it important?
I can think of two examples that I've come across recently. One was this morning. I was on a forum that someone was posting about, hey, my C-level and my VPs come to us, my IT team, and said, hey, you know, the business then wants to start quantifying your value, which is kind of terrifying, right, as a question. But it's like, well, part of that would be, well, how do you quantify the value of no successful ransomware infections, right? You know, what prove the negative there. But even then, the other one, the even maybe more terrifying one, both are terrifying, equally terrifying in different ways. Bunch of headlines going around recently, right, around a lot of insurance companies that are pondering, let's say, getting out of the game of writing or underwriting ransomware insurance or cybersecurity insurance, right? Because it's just not working out for them economically, right? Right. Attacks are getting more frequent, more successful, bigger with more penalties or bigger ransoms to recover. So that I think that is the more terrifying thought of those two, right? Like, what if there was no plan B, you know, and the mandate became be more successful more of the time at inhibiting or preventing ransomware infections in the environment, right? Or recovering from them just from backups, just from snapshots when they occur.
Yeah, I got a question. How long are you going to let me go on talking about Calm as if we were talking about Calm?
Well, you know, I know part of the shtick of the podcast, part of our charm is like the no edit model. So let's just see where Andy's going with this.
Oh, it's been a long day.
Wait, one take. That's what we do.
All right. Well, if you don't believe it's one take, you didn't. Hey, today we're going to talk about Flow. Micro segmentation.
I mean, I think we could all agree the best kind of security models are automated, right? So there's some cross pollination there.
I appreciate you cleaning that one up.
Yeah, man. Human powered operations have variants, and we don't like that in security.
All right. Well, I hate automation, but I love networks.
Security, arguably good automation.
Yeah. All right.
Love it.
Also, Harvey and Philip, would you agree that understanding how to micro segment and secure your network is something that everybody should have a handle on before they just start setting up crap?
Only if they want to contain certain things in certain areas. If they just want everything running around all willy-nilly, then they probably don't want this.
Yeah. I would argue that most of them probably have everything running around willy-nilly today. I mean,
well, I would argue that too, but is it what they want?
Yeah.
That's
the truth of that. Desired outcome versus reality, right?
Well, is that because they inherited layer two networks, or somebody who had a great idea that's no longer a great idea implemented a layer three and maybe four network?
I mean, I guess my quick answer to that is I would say because it used to be super hard. It was, you know, there was not only the piece of you have to think about what you want to move from one container to another container, or one zone to another zone, depending on what you call it within your network. But, you know, you have traffic that has to move from one place to the other.
Yep.
You have to allow for that traffic to move from one place to the other, and then you have to stop the other stuff from happening. So that on its head sounds pretty easy. Like, I know I want this to go that place. I know I want this to go that place. I want this thing not to make it either place. That's great. But then what does that mean for your applications? And, you know, if you are running an application or you have a user running an application and they're walled off from the server they need to get to, in order for that application to function, that becomes a very big issue for you.
And I agree with Harvey. It used to be much harder. It is easier today, but it's still easier further just to keep things wide open. you know, there's no configuration, there's no anything in the middle of things. And it's hard to fight 25, 30 years of prevailing wisdom that you harden the outside of your network and the inside's okay. Yeah. And I think a lot of people still think that way today, that it's okay to just worry about securing your perimeter and not worry about what's going on in the network.
Yeah, if securing the app makes it inaccessible for a while, I get yelled at, right? So I don't want to do that.
Right,
yeah.
Well, Jira, you just said the word I was waiting on, and that was the application. So, okay, there's layer two networks from back in the day. You know, my Linksys switch sitting here on my desk, my dumb switch. And then there became a micro segmentation of data flow, you know, ones and zeros. And then it became, hey, what is the application doing? Who needs access to it? What's the app supposed to be doing? It became application centric, which to some degree made it even more complex for network guys who may not have been told what the app was up to proactively.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to agree with Philip, right? Like the last 20 or 30 years has primarily just been about increasing network performance and maybe making it denser, right? But fundamentally, same NICs, same switches that we kind of used back then. You know, and so being in the business of sort of being like, wait, slow down, let's secure stuff, let's make it harder to get to, either was like physically expensive, you were talking like a siloed design, or this app is behind a firewall, but mm-hmm. the rest of my VMs are not. Mm-hmm. Or you're getting massively more complex in your network design.
Well, and I've been through a number of different exercises with, you know, ISVs, you know, independent software vendors. They brought in their product, worked in a fairly secure environment, and they can't articulate what it actually takes for their application to communicate, what ports and what traversal and what talks to what. So, you know, as a operations person, if your expert can't help you map those things out, it becomes a very stressful and difficult process to implement those rules as well.
Yes, absolutely.
So going back to the, well, okay. So one thing I want to say, and I'm hard to come back to you, but you know, when it came to network changes back in the old days, like when I was a sysadmin, if something broke, the network guy and the application guy started pointing fingers at each other. And it was my job as one of those, but also in a leadership role in the organization. Okay, who changed what? Because it used to work. Now it doesn't work. Something changed. And more often than not, it was nobody really wanted to take the blame. One of my favorite stories to tell in that regard is I went in and I was like, crap, I don't get it. And I started touching the you know, the ports on the switch, or maybe it was on the patch panel, whatever. And I touched one of them and I heard click. I was like, uh-oh. And then boom, everything started working again. Harvey, you were going to say something. I interrupted you.
Oh, I don't remember now. You go ahead.
All right. So I'm in this one paragraph here, I'm highlighting on the screen. Before Flow, network security was GA, network customer, Nutanix customer TED using HV, micro segmentation, had to rely on third parties. It was complicated. It was a lot to, you know, bring in a whole nother set of technologies. It wasn't integrated. Now, so, you know, what is now we've got it built into AHV and the Acropolis world. And then, so how easy is it? I haven't had a chance to do it. How simple have you guys made it, Jarvan?
It's crazy simple. It's actually pre-installed, right? It's actually on every running AHV hypervisor instance. So there's nothing to install, nothing to deploy. You simply turn on the control plane, lives inside Prism Central. And that's it. So one checkbox. And then after that, you're just right in the business of writing policies of what do you want to control and allow or disallow or monitor. So to even more simply put that, it's like putting a firewall in front of every single virtual machine NIC, right? So it's there to start giving it instructions.
I'll second that. You know, this is one of those things that when somebody tells or when somebody told me how easy it was, and that, like Jira said, it's just a checkbox and then you go in and writing policies. It's one of those moments where I go, all right, that sounds too good to be true. Prove it. And so I had, you know, my first time implementing it, I had somebody right next to me saying, okay, go here, click the checkbox. I clicked the checkbox and everything else was literally, like Jaira said, it's just writing policy. This set of traffic can go here. This set of traffic can go here. That can't go anywhere outside of its own little box. And it was like, okay, it's not supposed to be this simple. But I mean, they've got a very nice GUI. They've got a very nice setup there where you can actually see and visualize what's happening and what you're putting into place. And that makes it extremely easy.
And Harvey, when you checked that box, did it turn off all communication? Did it just start monitoring communication and start suggesting stuff? What did it do?
Well, you've got options there. So you can have it start as soon as you want it to start. And then you just have everything blocked and you figure your way back to where everything works, or you can watch.
Yeah, there's no risk of, there's no way to turn it on and all of a sudden lose all traffic, right?
Yeah. So,
but yeah, you're enabling the control plane, right? And then you could certainly create a policy to say totally, like, you know, stop everything and only allow what I whitelist. But you would do that pretty intentionally. But yeah, actually, I think Phil actually was touching on the real main value prop, right? Because if you're listening to this and you go, well, great, I can make policies, but I don't know what policies to make. Mm-hmm. Then what you can do from minute one, right, with Flow is let it start telling you what it observes, right? What traffic actually already is flowing, which involves a certain amount of trust around like steady state and current state. Like, is this secure or is there like an ongoing infection, right? And you would need to kind of understand that a little bit. Yes. Or, you know, if you look at it and say that server shouldn't be talking to that server at all, well, surprise, it is. Great. We're already proving our value there. Go stop it. But it already looks, you know, pretty healthy. And you can see like, okay, yeah, these database servers talk to these, you know, app tier servers and then communicate with these web tier servers or load balancers. That's all pretty normal. Well, great. Now we've already fingerprinted all of the traffic there. So then you can start saying what's currently flowing. That's considered my allowed state. And then new stuff beyond that, you can say, I want to get alerted when other things try to communicate, disallow them, and build policies based off of that. You can go back to your ISVs and say, hey, I found out what ports your application needs, and we only allow those now.
Right. And as you move to ISVs and clouds, well, in this case, ISVs, or maybe clouds, yeah, clouds too, it becomes more and more important to be able to control this traffic flow because now you're in shared environments.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So I think we've answered this, but let's make sure. So what does micro segmentation do or solve for as opposed to network segmentation that we all grew up on?
So this is security without needing to change your network design at all, right? So this works on the network you already have and already are, if you're listening to this, probably running Nutanix on or thinking about. So no need to re-IP your VMs, no need for more VLANs, no need for more routers, switches, hairpinning traffic, any of that stuff, right? Like the VMs you have today on the network you have today can just gain more security right in place, gain better security posture right where they are.
And that is very application friendly versus network segmentation, which the app was just along for the ride.
Sure. Yeah. If you were taking a network segmentation approach, right, you'd be doing a ton of re-IPing, a lot of DNS updates, probably get lots of calls from users around application connectivity.
Yes.
That probably none of us want you to be getting.
Yeah. All right. So in the next section of the blog, it's got a bunch of flow, process flow. Jaira, how do we cover this in such a way that makes sense to a listener?
Yeah, if you want to look at a flowchart of how Flow evaluates traffic policies, check out this blog, which we haven't said yet, actually is on our Nutanix dev blog. So Nutanix.dev is our super technical blog, really good stuff on there. So there's a whole flowchart of the Flow engine, how it evaluates policies that you can go check out maybe when you're not driving or next time you're at your computer. How's that?
Good. Yeah, I think that was good. Good job.
I think the main thing to take away is it's easy to understand what it's doing to understand, to manage the process, and it's clearly defined, and you can really get specific about what you want to happen and what part of the process. Is that fair?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a layer 4 firewall, right? So you can always talk about source and destination IP addresses or source and destination subnets or network masks, protocols and ports, right? So any kind of a rule you can write with those kind of verbs, that's what Flow can evaluate natively and enforce or deny. You could even bolster this by adding third-party firewalls, like adding a Palo in there to say, you know, do web session control as well, redirect to partner appliances, but out of the box, it's layer 4. So that's the mechanism that works at, and this is the engine that it evaluates rules in.
Yeah. Okay. So the next section of the blog says, what are the benefits of micro-segmentation with Flow Network Security? First one is gain visibility. I think it goes back to my question to Harvey a while ago. What happens when you turn it on? At the very least, you get a nice roll-up of what's happening, right?
Yeah. So on this piece of the blog, for those who can see it or are going to the link to look at it, you'll see kind of illustrations of what they pulled out of the GUI when it was in monitor mode. And so at a very basic level, for those who can't see it, at the top, it tells you what you've configured. And at the bottom, it tells you what it's discovered for you. And at that point, you know, again, you can kind of make smarter decisions so that, to Andy's point, you don't block everything from going everywhere. You can already see what it has discovered for you and then choose to allow or deny that traffic appropriately.
Right.
Being in for G.I. Joe, right? Knowing is half the battle.
Yes. There you go. A real American hero.
Real internet cloud hero. Okay. Jaira, Philip, any additional comments to just the visibility piece?
Just that it's a super common pain point if you're in that category, like Phil mentioned, around like, I have no idea what my apps require because my application owners don't know what their apps require. Yes. Hey, this directly addresses that really easily.
Well, and not just maybe your application vendors, but maybe your in-house developers. I mean, we don't necessarily pay developers to map out everything that they're talking to and stuff or know those things. They're consuming services and they may not provide you with a treasure map when they hand over the application to the operations team. So it's a great way of seeing what's going on in your in-house apps as well. I mean, my wife works in an environment where they're trying to change and track certain things. You know, if you don't measure it, you can't improve it. And so visibility is huge, right? I mean, making things visible is the first step.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's my list for 2023. I have to make it visible before I can go do the rest of the stuff.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Next section says secure EW traffic. I know what that means. Drives me nuts that tech guys use acronyms. I've never seen that one before, but I know what it means. Zyra, what does this mean?
So this is east-west, meaning traffic sort of left to right on a switch, right? Not going up and down to a upstream or downstream router. To your question before, Andy, right, around like, well, why wouldn't I just do network segmentation, right, to implement security? Partly because network segmentation doesn't really help you with east-west traffic, right? So a couple of examples would be two things on the same switch, right? Or even two VMs on the same hypervisor. Normally, nothing really impedes that traffic. If you're on the same hypervisor instance, nothing even hits the switches to see that, right? So then you would need like in-guest agents, which, you know, we don't really do for Flow, don't need for Flow. But since we're operating at the vNIC level, right, then even VM to VM on the same hypervisor, that traffic can be seen, controlled, you can apply policies to it.
Yeah. Philip, you're a data center guy. East-west traffic matters to you. It has for a long time, right?
It does. But this is back to the old school, you know, thing. I mean, this is kind of your candy bar. And we cared about the nice chocolate outside, but not the ooey gooey nougat center of the candy bar. You know, this is where we're being leveraged. I mean, frankly, that's where the bad guys are going after our networks at this point. And that's why this matters most. You know, ransomware is coming in on an endpoint. And when the endpoint is able to talk unobstructed to the virtual machines sitting here in Nutanix, it's going to be a bad day for your organization.
Yeah. Yeah. East-West is where it all happens, right? So like,
yes.
If I'm a ransomware attacker, if you have whatever, let's just say 500 desktops, the odds that I landed on the one that has the user session with the best credentials, astronomically low, right? So I'm going to try to move east-west, right? Move horizontally in the environment, get to other desktops, other sessions, see what I can get to from there. So that's where all that we say east-west, kind of just topologically, kind of traffic movement looks like.
And north-south, that would be ingress and egress out of your network. And I'm assuming what we're saying here is that most people have improved since the 90s and those routers aren't wide open anymore.
I think it's more like less and less traffic has to do a north-south traversal, right? More things happen east-west without touching a router, right? Going from desktop to desktop, desktop to domain controller, fewer things. You know, think 20 years ago, right? To go from web server to database server, you might go across five cabinets and, you know, two switches and a router in the middle. Right. And now, again, that density, right? And performance comes in from virtualization. Fewer and fewer things have to cross that core or touch a router or point of routing even to get where they need to get to. So east-west is where it all happens these days. Therefore, you need more control over that kind of flow pattern.
And I think that ties into the next one. Harvey, you want to take it first? Limit ransomware. That's where the bad stuff's coming today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point, to what Jaira was just speaking about, you know, the attackers, the malware, the whatever is not going to come in by way of a domain admin or somebody, you know, who has credentials that will take it all the places it wants to go across the network. So, you know, the code is now set to basically just start touching everything that it can touch. And if you use micro segmentation to stop it from being able to go anywhere outside of a certain container, it can only affect what's in that container. And the smaller you make that, the more secure you'll be from that standpoint. Now, it doesn't mean go and do it for every single workstation, but you could.
And there's a whole school of thought, right? How this evolves into like zero trust networking, where basically to short circuit that, just because it's on my network doesn't mean I want to trust it, right? Or the opposite, right? In this case, if it's like something that an end user does work on, I actively don't want to trust it, right? That's almost as untrusted as like the wide open internet. But I have to run a virtual desktop, an EUC environment that I deliver and control from my network. So how do I keep that on my network and yet not trust it and yet maintain full control over it? And flows, I'm going to do that. I think this article might not even go deep into it, but to give a quick sidebar, with Flow, we can even change what the firewall rules are around that VM based on who logged into it, right? So if it's a contractor, if it's a vendor, they get nothing, maybe like the one copier they want to go touch and internet access. And when one of us logs in as an admin, maybe we get other internal systems that we can go see and touch or get to a jump box that the vendor couldn't have gotten to. So so zero trust, and how do I restrict access, you know, not let them have wide open access to my network, maintain that control. You know, this is an easy way to get really, really far down that road real fast.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely it. It's very, very customizable. You've got the ability to kind of see as you're putting in these types of policies, you've got the ability to see what you're doing so that hopefully you don't make mistakes, but at least if you do, you'll be able to kind of visualize and see those mistakes to help you through that piece of it as well.
Right. Next one talks about less reliance on next generation firewalls. Is that because we don't want to have to talk to those network admins anymore?
No, we love our network admins, right? Like they're key to everything we do. Without that, everything stops pretty fast. But some of the most tools with the most deepest inspection capabilities, right? Like a layer 7 inspecting firewall or like a WAF, are the most expensive, right? And have the sort of least throughput compared to like every switch port in the data center added together. So we want to use them for the right workload, right? So if we needed to do like web session inspection, I want to only pass that kind of traffic through that and not make it look at maybe all my AD queries or my backups or other like nonsense traffic to or from my virtual machine. So that ability to, it's not less reliance, it's more like a more targeted use case of like use them for what they're really, really good at, what I need them to do. But you know, use a more scalable and native solution like us built in the firewall, built in the hypervisor to do my broad layer 4 firewalling on all my VMs.
Right. Yeah, that was just a joke, right?
Oh, no, you're fine. So yeah, it's more like a scarce resource kind of proposition.
Well, I love the way you answered it, and it could be, and I don't think you said it this way, but those technology devices, we want to use those for what they're good for. We also want to take that the time that those network admins, let them go do what they're good at, not, you know, and let us as the application owners, virtual machine owners, add a layer of network security that we control.
Sure. Well, and we can tie this back to how we kind of started, like with automation. Once I have all of my policies set up for like, this is how I secure Active Directory joined database servers. This is how I secure my Linux public web servers. All these various policies that I can just create once and then use repeatedly. The act of applying that security policy to a new VM is trivial, right? It's like literally like a flag in my automation run or my API call or my ServiceNow job execution to say, yes, I want a VM with these many vCPUs and memory and storage. And this guy over here is the owner, but this team can access it. And I want this backup policy. Oh, and by the way, it gets this flow network policy. And from the minute that that VM is deployed, it's part of our security policy, right? And has posture already in place.
Well, and the policies can be applied by categories inside of Nutanix. So, you know, you also get auditability and you know where those elements are at. And it's an easy change. I mean, the simplification, I think, it is a huge part of the story there.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, and we talked through already some of those pieces and being able to do that. You can do that by user so that you have certain sets of users who get certain policies, and then you can do it by machine, which again, like we're talking about now, you know, you add a domain controller, it gets the domain controller policy. You add a print server, it gets the print server policy. Like, you've got the ability from day one, from as soon as those machines are built, to have them already in the policy the first time that they boot up.
So guys, this next one is maintain regulatory compliance. You know, it's a necessary evil at this point. One, so you can get your insurance policy, and two, so that the world of governance can make sure that everybody that meets certain regulatory compliance certification needs is attempting to comply with what the industry has said is necessary.
Yeah. But again, you know, having the ability to have visibility from the front already helps you, because when you can go and actually prove that this is the way this is set up and show someone who doesn't work in networking every day or doesn't work in Nutanix every day something simple where they can understand, okay, this line goes from here to here, that line doesn't go anywhere. Like, they can understand that pretty easily. So the ability to take that with pretty, you know, not a high level of effort to pull that down and actually put it in front of somebody who can, you know, pass or fail you from an audit perspective, I think is pretty important.
I think it's that. I think it's also, we can all think of past customers, past jobs where it's been like, okay, this system's in scope for a certain audit or certain control. One of the easiest ways for the business to sort of get the assurance they need there is give it a silo, right? It gets its own storage, its own compute, its own whatever, which works, but there's some inherent kind of waste there. And with this being a way to apply security policy mixed into a larger environment, if that satisfies the controls, then that actually gets more efficiency, right? Fewer admin teams or a better human to managed VM ratio, and better density, better use of the resources. Combined with, if you're going for regulatory compliance, the more you can automate that, the better your posture anyway, right? You don't want that to be a human controlled process or a bunch of one-offs, right? Because people make mistakes. We've made mistakes on this podcast, but the more I can automate all of that,
not you, any other,
Harvey and I made mistakes on this podcast. The more you automate, right, the more repeatable something becomes.
Well, that's it. I mean, remove the human factor, right? I mean, across this whole thing, whether we're talking about the automation of the security controls or whether we're talking about who we trust and not trusting our you know, client workstations and things like that. I mean, it's the human factor that's often the trip point.
So guys, I think we can sum this up by talking about Nutanix as a company being about providing platforms. And one of the platforms is, of course, the Acropolis operating system for the storage piece, but throw into that the Acropolis hypervisor for the hypervisor piece of what's needed. And then you start layering across that lots of technologies, Flow being one that is starting to aim towards that platform as a service. From your data center, the vendor, the partner data center, from the cloud, and all of that being able to be managed from one pane of glass platform.
Totally. And it's not the one silver bullet, right? It exists as part of a spectrum of protection and a spectrum of recoverability, right? So it exists with snapshots that you can get to in seconds worth of notice and backups as well that are therefore more immutable and they're like indexed and longer attention. And snapshots are not backups. Backups are not snapshots, but you probably want both. Role-based access for my administrators and who can see what. But yes, to your point, it's all part of the same platform. End users that can pull back their own data from those snapshots, right, without even bugging an admin or opening a ticket with IT, and even detecting like when have I had evidence of compromise in my environment, right? So this is just kind of one facet of the entire protection and recovery story.
Yep. Philip, thoughts on what we've covered?
I know this article doesn't go into it, but there's so much more here, so I can't wait for part two when we dig into some of the other features that are here. But from a security perspective, I mean, we can't stick our head in the sand and act like it's okay to leave everything wide open anymore. We're at an inflection point. And Jira talked about it at the very beginning where insurance companies are talking about removing coverage. I know cyber conversations that our customers and past experience, they're becoming more and more stringent. They're looking deeper into the network, trying to ensure that if they are going to cover you, you're doing the right things. This is going to be one of those right things that our customers should be doing and should be working on in their environments.
Well, and for me, as much as I wish the world didn't have to be this way, it all comes down to money. So if it comes down to you're going to pay more or you're not going to be able to get covered for potential risk of losing money, that's what drives these solutions in the mid to long run. Whereas technologists, kind of want these things, it's the ability to financially justify it or require it that always get us back to, follow the money.
Yeah,
you're right. I mean, I don't really handle pricing per se, but the fact that this is included is pretty meaningful to a lot of people making decisions. Yeah. And the fact that it's so easily configured, right, also means that this is not going to be, 6 month, 12 month, multiple commas worth of science projects to get enabled.
Well, I will highlight that Nutanix as a company seems to get that a lot of stuff just needs to be included.
Yeah.
Agreed.
These are basic things everybody needs. Figure out a way to make it part of the solution, not keep everything one more license away from what we own.
They also seem to understand that it needs to be simple to consume.
Simplification of the tech and the licensing, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the implementation, as Harvey talked about, is simple. That goes a long way to accessibility and success with your implementations.
Yeah. Harvey, anything else to add?
Just for fun.
Oh, no.
For those that don't believe in micro segmentation, when you go home today, lock all your doors, lock all your windows, and then knock down every wall and every door in your house.
then
you'll get why you need micro segmentation.
The podcast accepts no liability for any damage to personal property.
I thought you were going to do. I thought you'd say lock all your doors, lock all your windows, and then make your Wi-Fi a wide open password or something.
No. even more physical. Just knock down all your walls and all your doors. Mm-hmm. That's your network with no micro segmentation.
If you want an easier way to learn about it, if you go to the blog post, there's a link to the Nutanix test drive experience where you can hop onto a live running cluster from your browser at home if you want to as well. Walls, your choice. And try it out where you can start configuring policies and flow right away and get some hands-on experience there.
So look, I can't go home tonight and sleep until somebody explains to me what that man's talking about.
If you didn't believe us that we don't edit these, maybe you do now.
Philip, what's he talking about? Lock your doors, lock your windows.
Yeah, that's your north-south traffic. Lock your doors, lock your windows. Nothing from the outside can get in. Nothing from the inside can get out unless you give it permission.
Are you saying knock down all the walls inside the house?
Interior.
That's right.
Interior walls.
Yes, interior walls, interior doors.
Okay. Well, you gotta put what's holding the roof up?
That's got to go on your list, Harvey.
All right, so let me add to that. Okay, so lock your doors, lock your windows, knock down all your interior walls, and then go, you know, go take your clothes off and see if you feel... I get dressed in my closet more often than not these days. Just somebody just walks in, Dad, and I'm like, what? Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think we've had fun. I got promised my wife I'd be home by 5 o'clock every day this week because I'm never home. So I got to go.
Yeah, you better run.
I'll be close. Until next time, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.